Yeah, so thanks a lot, Greg. So, well, in this session devoted to what was and what is an agricultural experiment, I'm going to talk about a particular form of agricultural experimentation, which is animal breeding. And I'm going to do so by placing a relatively recent achievement, the cloning of the sheep Dolly, within a wider and longer history of animal genetics research in Edinburgh. I'm sure most of you are familiar with Dolly. Just to refresh your mind, Dolly was cloned in 1996 at the Roslin Institute, which was then a new and cutting-edge research institution in Roslin, a town close to Edinburgh. And given the increasing popularity of the sheep, the cloning experiments were soon considered as an example of the potential of recombinant DNA as applied to agricultural science. Recombinant DNA is a set of techniques which enable the alteration of the genetic material of a given species, in this case an animal, but it can be also applied to plants, even to humans. It was widely believed at that point in the mid 1990s that recombinant DNA was transforming the practice of biomedicine. So, what can historical research contribute to this widely accepted story, very much focused on the immediacy of the recombinant DNA technologies? Well, I think that by focusing on other details of the story, for example, that Dolly was cloned in Roslin, and that is quite an iconic animal, very much entrenched into the popular culture of Scotland, it's got a replica in the National Museum of Scotland, it is possible to see the cloning story as part of a wider genealogy of animal breeding, which is developed in less fancy and more traditional settings, such as Roslin or other places of rural Scotland. And it was framed in the experimental cultures of classical genetics, and until very recently, until the 1980s, it didn't embrace the emerging recombinant DNA technology. So today I want to offer you just an outline of this genealogy. It's still very early work in progress, and I'm going to very much draw on a Wellcome Trust funded archival initiative towards Dolly. It was presented earlier today by my colleague Claire Button, which is cataloging the records not only of the Roslin Institute, but of a wide range of Edinburgh-based animal genetics institutions, which date back to the early 20th century and which are somewhat connected to the more recent cloning experiments. It's quite a complicated institutional history, so I'm going to just pass you a handout which is like a timeline of the different institutions and places I'm going to talk about. It was produced by the Towards Dolly Archive, so thanks to Claire again. And just to begin, animal breeding, and particularly sheep breeding, have always been present in Scotland. They have always been a very important source of employment, of wealth, and there are historians, for example, Nicholas Russell or Sarah Franklin, who have documented a long tradition of exchange and mating between different breeds of sheep in Scotland, in Ireland, different parts of Britain, and even other areas in Europe and the British Empire. This history of exchange dates back at least to the early modern period, and more recently, at the University of Edinburgh, a professor of natural history, James Cossard Ewart, who had been working on breeding zebra and breeding horses, decided that it was time to institutionalize animal breeding as a field which could potentially bridge the emerging field of genetics, in which Edinburgh was quite strong, with the more mundane economic necessities of Scottish farmers and Scottish peasants. So he started lobbying at the University of Edinburgh and also at the Board of Agriculture for Scotland, which was a body of the UK government, and he managed to establish the first UK lectureship in genetics in 1911. It was awarded to Arthur Derbyshire, than a very promising scientist, and later to organize a university department, which was later transformed into the Institute of Animal Genetics, which was the research arm into this emerging field of the University of Edinburgh. By the time the institute was founded, Darbyshire had been killed in the First World War, so the management of the institute came to a younger researcher, Francis Crewe, who had a background in medicine and also experience and interest in genetics and particularly chicken breeding. So the establishment of animal genetics, the department and the institute in Edinburgh were shaped by the context of World War I and its consequences in animal health and in the productivity of agriculture. At that time, animal epidemics were still a very big problem in Britain. There is a Korean historian, Kim Heung Kim, who has documented how Edinburgh played a key role in research into scrapie and other animal diseases. And there was also concerns among the British government that Britain was depending too much on food imports. And this worsened with World War II and the rise of food rationing in Britain. So towards the mid to late 1940s, after World War II, the Agricultural Research Council, which was a body of the UK government, it has been created in the interwar period to develop more systematic policies and to advise farmers on how to improve productivity in food production, decided to establish two new institutions in Edinburgh, the Animal Breeding Research Organization, ABRO, and the Poultry Research Centre. And they appointed a very important geneticist and embryologist from Cambridge, Conrad Hall Waddington, as the chair of animal genetics of the university and the chief geneticist of ABRO. So the initial plan is that these two new institutions would collaborate with the Institute of Animal Genetics, so the more basic genetics research would be conducted in the university, and then ABRO and the Poultry Research Center would focus more on the breeding experiments. But as time went on, the new institutions got more and more independent from the university and developed a network of experimental stations which were coordinated in a field laboratory in Roslyn. So during the 50s and 60s, ABRO and the Poultry Research Center consolidated as reference centers in the breeding of pigs, of sheep, of cows, and they developed quite a wide and comprehensive research program with two main objectives. First, the improvement of animal health, and secondly, the increase in the commercial yield of livestock. So things looked to be going very well for Edinburgh at that point, but towards the mid-70s, there is this lead editorial in the research report of ABRO, 1974, in which researchers there seem to be worried for what they perceive as a widening gap between what was done in the laboratory and the field stations and the real necessities of the farmers. And I think this is concomitant with a dramatic policy shift in Britain where the public investments in science and technology drastically reduce, and there is an increasing pressure over researchers to find tangible outcomes or applications for their research. And in biomedicine, the recombinant DNA technologies, which have been developed between 1973 and 75 and were the basis in the late 70s and early 80s of the nascent biotechnology industry, were seen an opportunity to change the pace of agricultural science and realign it with what were called the necessities of the people. So in 1983, ABRO decided to establish a research program in molecular biology, and they appointed researchers with expertise in this field. Among them, Rick Latte, who has been working in the French biotechnology company Transgene, and later John Clark, who was a molecular biologist already based in Edinburgh, but who has been working in the Medical Research Council Cytogenetics Unit, which, as Soraya de Chavarrebien has pointed out, was a very important center of research into human genetics in Edinburgh and in Britain. This molecular biology program has two interrelated branches. The first one was genome mapping, was locating and isolating genes of different animals. And the second one was the production of transgenic animals, which was inserting these genes into foreign species so the animal would be genetically modified. And the objectives of these genetic modifications were two. the first one to produce food more efficiently, and the second one to use, and this one, this second objective was more derived from the background of the molecular biologists in human genetics and the biotechnology industry, to use animals as platforms to improve human health. And the STAR program within this second line of research, which was called later farming with PH, was producing transgenic seed which would have an extra foreign gene that would express proteins that could be used in the treatment of human diseases. So this project into farming was the basis of a biotechnology company called Pharmaceutical Proteins Limited, and established in Edinburgh in 1987. And 1 year before this, the Agricultural Research Council, which has then been renamed as Agriculture and Food Research Council, decided to reorganize its research institutions in order to manage costs more effectively. It was still a time of crisis in research, so they merged ABRO and the Poultry Research Center with the Institute of Animal Physiology in Baderham in Cambridgeshire to form the Institute of Animal Physiology and Genetics Research, with two research stations, one in Edinburgh and the other one in Cambridgeshire. And this move met with substantial opposition because it involved drastic reductions of staff in both institutions. So the molecular biologists were one of the main survivors of this merger, and in order to obtain transgenic animals, the first step was injecting the extra foreign gene into the embryos of the animals. And in order to do so, they needed to collaborate with the very well-known guy in this story, the developmental biologist Ian Wilmut. Ian Wilmut has joined ABRO in the mid-70s. He has been working with Chris Porch in Cambridge in the experimental animal station, and he has been working in the transfer of embryos to surrogate mothers in order to improve the birth success of sheep. And this was his line of research also in Edinburgh until this collaboration with molecular biologists. But as a result of this, the first transgenic animal in Rosling was born, the sheep Tracy. It was a sheep which contained an extra human gene which secreted in the milk of the sheep proteins that could be used to treat emphysema and cystic fibrosis, so human lung conditions. But the team soon realized that the sheep had problems to express these therapeutic proteins in adult form. So they started to look into methods to do the transgenesis, to insert the extra gene before the embryo was formed, rather than after the embryo was formed. And it is at this point when Wilmut started to look for a suitable cloning technology for sheep. This was greatly facilitated by an addition to the team in 1991, Keith Campbell joins Edinburgh. Keith Campbell has been working on cell differentiation during cancer, so how cells mutate with the formation of tumors and the metastasis of tumors. And his expertise in cell programming and reprogramming was crucial for the nuclear transfer technology that was used in Dolly. Before this happened, there was another institutional shift, and this is the last one, I promise. I know it's a bit complicated, because the Institute for Animal Physiology and Genetics Research split again, and what was the Edinburgh Station, so ABRO and the Poultry Research Centre, separated from Cambridgeshire, from Baberham, and they were reconstituted as the Roslin Institute in 1993 as a centre linked to the University of Edinburgh but administered by the Biotechnology and Biological Sciences Research Council, which was the new name of the Agriculture and Food Research Council. And it was here in Roslin where the cloned sheep were produced. First, Megan and Morag in 1995, they were produced by nuclear transfer, by the transfer of a cell nucleus from an embryo cell into a new embryo. And then in 1996, Dolly, from nuclear transfer from an adult cell to an embryo. And if you reckon, the objective of the cloning technology was to facilitate the production of transgenic animals. And this is why in 1 year afterwards, in 1997, another clone sheep was born as a result of collaboration between the Roslin researchers and Pharmaceutical Proteins Limited
the biotechnology company that wanted to commercialize it.
And this seed was both cloned and transgenic. So it had an extra human gene that produced proteins that could be used in the treatment of hemophilia. So after this, Campbell continues working with the biotechnology company, with Pharmaceutical Proteins Limited, and he attempted to create other clones and transgenic animals. But the commercial success of this was always hindered by difficulties to expressing for the animals to express the therapeutic proteins in adult form. And Wilmut continues to use the cloning technology, but as a source for obtaining stem cells rather than as a means to obtain transgenic animals. And he reoriented his successful postdoc career as a stem cell biologist rather than an animal breeder or an animal geneticist. And in fact, he is now an emeritus fellow of the new cutting-edge research institution in Edinburgh, the Centre for Regenerative Medicine, which is a joint venture of the University of Edinburgh and the Medical Research Council, not the Agriculture and Food Research Council. So, to conclude, I think this story, The Birth of Dolly, can be seen as the result of a long history, a longer and more complex genealogy of animal genetics research in Edinburgh, because the cloning experiment were not just the result of the application of molecular biology and recombinant DNA. Developmental and cell biology, the input of Ian Wilmuth and Keith Campbell, was very crucial for the success of cloning. And this expertise in how embryos evolved and how cells differentiated has been an integral part of the older research tradition on animal breeding in Edinburgh. And this is what an exclusive focus on recombinant DNA and molecular biology on the more recent application of the cloning technology prevents to see what has happened before. And this is, I think, the point of this historical perspective on an apparently very recent topic. Secondly, The Birth of Dolly is also saved by the 1980s context of decrease in public expenditure in science and technology and push towards application. But what is striking is that the animal breeding work in Edinburgh has always been applied. What I think changes in this time is what is considered a worthwhile application in agricultural science. And there is a shift from producing more food to producing it more effectively, and from just focusing on animal health to using animals as vehicles for improving human health. This new emphasis in human health is what enables the alliance of molecular biologists, of biotechnologists, of human geneticists, and of traditional breeders around the transgenic animal subprogram in Edinburgh that leads to the cloning of Dolly. But the cloning is always a means for obtaining transgenic animals, so for using animals in the treatment of human disease and not an end in itself. So the cloning is never used with the purpose of just copying animals or perpetuating especially fit animals, as it was reported very shortly after the cloning experiment. So I think, as it happens very often, there is a gap between the ethical debates about the future of this technology and what the scientists really wanted, the practice of the scientists at that precise moment. And because of this, because of this increasingly human-centered and health-centered paradigm of agricultural sciences, the farmer, who was the original objective of the Agricultural Research Council, of the post-war policies, and of the Edinburgh Animal Breeding Organizations, remains largely absent in this story. It's a sort of invisible force which is rhetorically invoked in the research reports, but never really or directly benefits from the experiments and the achievements. And this is all. Thank you very much.
Thank you.